to be embarrassed on national internet.
National, it's radio. Don't worry about it.
Radio, internet radio. Okay, hey, so let's do a little scenario. You're driving, for some reason you have to get to Cincinnati.
Okay.
You got family in Cincinnati.
I got a family in Cincinnati.
From here, you have to make a funeral or a wedding or, you know, some reason you got to drive.
You pause.
We drive straight through to Cincinnati.
What kind of car am I driving?
Yours.
Okay. I don't get a rental car. I don't get like a fake car in your scenario.
Let's just say you're doing a Corolla. Just logically what you would do. You gotta get to Cincinnati as quickly as possible.
By myself?
Yeah. Hop in your car. The wife's busy. So you just hop in your car and go, right? Kind of practically, kind of get some stuff together.
Get some
quick suitcase.
Snacks.
And you go out.
I don't need a suitcase. I just need snacks.
Back. Okay.
I'll buy clothes on the way.
Your suit. You get a little button down and your slacks and you hang them on a hanger and put them in the rear. Weird deal. You know, you just do that and you're gone. How long a drive is it?
I believe it's like 16 hours, 17 hours, 18 hours.
So a good chunk of it's going to be overnight. And so you're driving along.
Okay.
And, you know, a bit of the highway is under construction. You get to a part. It said, do you go through Indiana?
You can, yes.
Let's say you're going through rural Indiana.
Okay.
Rural Nebraska, way out in the boonies. The highway's kind of closed down. Yeah. And there's a detour, and you take it, and you get kind of confused. You were planning on going on the normal highway, and you needed gas, but you're like, okay, I can make whatever this certain town. But because of the detour, you don't quite make it, so you kind of need gas, but you're on the detour. You get a little, maybe you get turned around. You're not quite sure where you are. Your GPS, you lose like your cell phone signal.
Not good.
Your gas is going. You're getting a little nervous because it's, you know, night. But it's like, okay, well, I'm an adult. I'm gonna keep going.
Yeah.
Your gas gets really low.
Getting low.
You're still kind of turned around. You're like, you come to like a fork. It's two ways you could go. Left or right. One probably leads to the highway, one leads you further off.
Yeah.
To Hoosier land. You take left, you go left. You don't know why, just like, I'm gonna go left. You go, you keep going, you're almost out of gas. You're like, okay, I need to stop.
Google,
I need to get a cell phone, I need to ask for directions. It's not too late, it's like 10:30. So it's not the middle of the night.
Might be open, okay.
Yeah, I just need to suck it up and find the next. You're on a country dirt road, no cell phone signal. You're almost on E. She's like, okay, it's weird in this day and age.
I got you.
But I need to stop at a farmhouse and ask, where am I? Where's the gas station? Is there a place? Can I get on your roof to try to get a cell phone signal? You know what I mean? Just, okay, I'm gonna have to do it. It's weird, it's 10:30, but it's one of those things life throws at you.
I don't like this.
Go by, you're driving down the road. It's a mile or two, there's still no farmhouses. You're starting to get desperate for a farmhouse.
Or anything in this country? I don't think so.
Okay. There's a bunch of corn. You're like, am I gonna have to spend the night? My car's gonna run out of gas. So I'm gonna spend the night in a cornfield. You finally see up ahead, there's the long driveway.
Okay.
Farmhouse. There's a light on. Like, okay, there's a light on. I'm not gonna wake anybody up at the farmhouse. You pull into the long driveway. And as you're pulling up to the driveway, there's a farmhouse, but there's not a light on in the house anymore. You're like, oh, crap. But you're still, I mean, you're.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm in. I'm gonna be an adult. I'm gonna ask for directions. Come up. You hear something like clunk. And then you get your tire starts making the little, I have a flat tire noise. And you thought you saw something metallic kind of flash. Like, did I hit something sharp? Did I hit a spike? Like, what's going on? And so you kind of pull up, you're kind of in their little circular gravel driveway. Off to your left is an old, old barn. really decrepit barn, and then there's an old farmhouse that kind of looks like people live there, but it doesn't look like it's painted.
I don't like this.
It looks kind of run down. There's no light. You swear you saw a light from the road, but there's no light on anymore.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, this is where I am. I'm going to see if people live here, try to get directions, try to get a signal. You hear something like slam, you look over, and it's just the old barn door. It slammed shut because of the wind.
You notice I'm doing the noises too for you a little bit. Okay.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, what was that? What was that? You get out of your car, you see, sure enough, you have a flat tire, and there's like a spike on that. And she's just like, that's weird, that's weird. But you see a light come on up in the house, and then the light go off again. You're like, what is going on? You hear the door slam again. You look over in the barn door. There's a little kid, maybe a 78-year-old girl, in the barn door in an old-timey dress staring at you. And you're kind of like staring at her, cocked your head, like, what's going on? And she gives you a little finger to the mouth, and she goes, shh. And she goes into the barn. The door slams again. The light comes on in the upstairs window. There's an old, like, obese man up there with a bag, and it looks like blood's coming out of the bag. The light goes off. That's it. What do you do? Ending it Calvino style. That's the that's your situation.
Can I be completely honest with you?
It's what I want.
You freak me out.
You are up in the attic.
Yeah, I am. And I just imagine that's a real scenario. I bought into your storytelling, and I'll be honest, I would be very sweaty and panicky.
You'd be freaking out.
I would be freaking out. Boy. I don't like this drive. It's a bad drive. What do I do? I think I run. Can I run? Is that an option? Can I run somewhere? Where am I running
to? Yeah, my instincts as just a consumer of horror stories and stuff.
You like the house on fire?
Because you're in the boonies.
Yeah.
Right?
Ugh, boy, man, you're
scenario's not bad.
You're pretty good at this, Matt.
It's a creepy scenario.
Yeah, right? It is.
Because every step of the way in real life, you'd be like, I'm gonna, you know, because you're
things like, can just kind of snowball. And
yeah, and they're like, oh, why does that little kid makes it creepy?
Do you know the feeling of? I think you and I, we feel like, you know, most situations it's, okay, we have a fair grasp of what's going on, a little bit in control. But every once in a while, stuff starts to get a little out of control and need that, there's that feeling in your stomach where it goes, oh no. You know what I'm, you know that feeling?
I do, and it's always kind of it's like a genuine sense of like, oh, there's trouble.
Yes. 'Cause
sometimes part of you realizes you're making stuff in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're cranky, you realize on some level, this is all in my head, it's fine, you know? But then when like something happens, you're like, oh crap. I had my car battery died like way out in Windsor one evening.
Mm-hmm.
It just wouldn't start. I was like, ah. You know, I got a little bit of that. You know, you're just like, this is, you know, like, you know, just weird when stuff really happens, the bottom falls out, you get that genuine sense.
I'm a sucker for this stuff too, and I try to avoid it.
Do you think that's part of the thrill of scary stories, is you can put yourself through that scenario, but through the safety of the page or the screen or whatever?
I
you know,
think kind of that like, it, there's an adrenaline rush to the scary story or the movie, right? It's the safe distance, but you're putting your senses through, if it's well done, through sort of a gauntlet, right?
Yeah.
Scare of trauma or fear of panic, all those things. Some people like that, all that stuff. It kind of is a roller coaster, so to speak. And I myself, I'm afraid of it. I think my issue and all these sort of stories, your story included, how they work on me is I really put myself in that scenario and I start to actually freak out a little bit. And the emotions start to get real, Matt. The emotions are real.
That's what makes you a good reader.
Is it though?
But you said no. Well, you put yourself in that scenario. I mean, that's the point of reading, not just horror stories. That's one of the humans were kind of like geared to absorb stories like that. We're empathetic animals. And so stories kind of help us experience things vicariously. And then you've kind of like gained more knowledge and experienced more things through having heard story. I mean, I think that's the point of like telling stories by the fireside and stuff. It's an evolutionary tool, right? And then scary stories, they're like a little riot or something. It's like, hey, ooh, that's creepy. What would you do?
And on that note, welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and scary stories. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. Matt, I have a question. You got me thinking while you're talking about this. You say I'm a good reader, right? I'm affected by the scary stuff, right? I get creeped out.
Yeah. You're extra sensitive.
I have a question for you. Maybe you can, I don't know the answer, and it's a personal one. I don't cry at books.
Even sad stuff?
Even very sad stuff. I don't cry. Yeah. I've gotten maybe emotional, but I don't cry at books. I cry at movies, right?
You do?
I cry at movies, but not
at books. Sad movies or like romantic?
Sad movies. I cry. Romantic ones, not as much. Maybe a little bit.
You don't cry at weddings? Or wedding scenes in romantic comedies when they finally get together.
No.
Sad stuff. Like, do you cry when Rudy gets to play? If Rudy's on
emotional, TV, I get a little emotional.
When he finally goes in.
I've cried at weird things. I don't know if people are familiar with this movie, but Mrs. Doubtfire.
People should be familiar with that movie. Yeah.
When he finally gets to like see his kids at the end, I remember.
As himself.
As a young wee lad, bawling my eyes out.
Yeah.
But my history with scary stuff is more ingrained in my mind, right? The scary story, the scary movie. I don't know about you, but my older brother wouldn't have scared you because we wouldn't have known each other, but he's watching the scary movies. He's watching Psycho at age 12. So I'm age 7 or 8.
Yeah.
That freaks me out. Okay. Yeah. So all the sort of scary stuff, I imagine myself in it. Okay. And the reason why we're talking about this, all this kind of scary stuff, is we read would you consider this a classic or like an underground classic of young?
Not quite under. I would consider it classic. I would maybe not quite underground.
It's a little alt, I would say.
And I think people our age,
yeah,
have heard of it, and it's more nostalgic. I think it was wildly successful back in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
And so.
And we're talking about Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, collected by Alvin Schwartz. Drawings, I think they changed the drawings, but the original drawings are from Stephen Gamow.
They did a reprint with a new guy drawing them. And I've seen some of the drawings. They're fine, but they're not as creepy. And there was a kind of an outcry. And they reprinted the old drawings with Stephen Gamble. And I think rightly so. What makes these books so creepy is the drawings.
The drawings are flat out scary.
That's what makes the book what it is.
It's a great combination of, I think, a good concept of a book. Sort of a...
Yeah, it's collected folklore.
Right? Yeah, it has more... that I didn't realize, like the genesis to all this stuff is like you were saying, the around the campfire, or trying to scare, like the oral tradition of stories early on, right? Some of these are just passed along. You just come across them by meeting people from different parts of the country, and that's how these stories get shared. It's not necessarily like I read it in a book, or it's like, you know, my uncle from Kentucky told us this story on a camping trip.
And that's what Alvin Schwartz did. He wrote like 30 or 40 books. He wrote a lot of books, not all of them scary. He collected folklore and kind of retold. That was like his thing. he would just bring a tape recorder and interview people, you know. I mean, I guess this would be the 70s or 80s, and he'd interview old people and ask them about the stories they heard when they were kids, you know. So, and it's, and he collected them, and these just happen to be scary stories for kids.
I'm kind of surprised reading it as, you know, late 30s. I'm like, I can't believe they were just, everyone was just kind of cool with these. Because these are like, there's a couple, I'll get to them. There are a couple stories where I'm like, this is legit terrifying.
Yeah, I mean. But
my reaction now was like, I kind of was laughing. Like, oh, like I'm one of those. Like, oh man. Like, kind of like that. Like, appreciative. Yeah. But almost like trying to trick myself into, don't take this too seriously. You're an adult. You don't have to be freaked out. But they're very effective. And I mean, some of them are like kind of fun. Some of them are like almost performative. Like, this is how you're going to, you know, scare your friends.
Yeah. Or, yeah. You yell at the end or jump
out. And then at the end, it's sort of like a funny thing. But in the middle, and I only read I only had the first collection. I found all three.
So I just, yeah.
Quick read. And curious, I was going to ask you, are you going to read these books to your son at some point?
No, well, I'll keep them around. And I think when he, in fifth or sixth grade, if he discovers them, that's kind of when I discovered them.
Yeah.
They're perfect for that age. So I think I'll let him discover them and read them on his own.
Because there is an element to them of, there's a I think you make a good point of coming to these books on your own is sort of like a journey of like, kind of, how would I put it? Almost like a challenge to yourself to like continue on in a way. Don't you think in a weird way, it's a, like a growing experience or like, that sounds like I'm putting a lot of like, oh, this is a very like important book, but in some way, there are these like moments where you're like really scared, and it's not like you go and cry or whatever, but it's like, oh, you face your fear, and it's, I don't know. There's something, I don't know, enjoyable about that.
I read these back, you know, I think fifth or sixth grade or something like that. Mm-hmm. And some of the stories I hadn't read or thought about since then, and it almost put me back into the stories with the witches got me. There's some, and I think in the third volume, there's a pretty creepy story with the witch.
I'm going to read one of the stories. I'm going to try it in the scary stories a little bit later, if you indulge me. It might freak me out for a long time.
Okay, where did you read these?
So like,
what did you do?
I was quiet in a quiet, no one was around. And I had the dog sort of, but there was like nothing was on. So every kind of like tapping or whatever was sort of like a weird soundtrack to my reading experience. But mostly it was like my, like, I wouldn't say nervous chuckling or laughter at these stories, but the really like scary ones I thought were scary. And I was like, the quietness made it a little unnerving. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And if I allowed myself to like go into the scenario of the story, I was unnerved by some of them.
Yeah.
I'll say the one that unnerved me and I want to read is the person driving home from the dance and the car behind them has their brights on.
Oh, yeah.
That story freaked me out. It still freaks me out. I explained the story to my wife and she's like, oh, that sounds terrifying. I go, yeah, it is terrifying. I was like, this is a great story. And it's a page and a half, maybe.
Yeah.
What do you think of that story? Do you know the story I'm talking about?
That's creepy. And I remember that from when I was a kid too.
I think it matters too. If you can't drive, right, then would that story be as effective?
It's still scary.
It's pretty scary. I don't know. I was like, after that one, I was like, oh, no, there's a person. Anyway,
I thought the room for one more was creepy. Okay. That was the one where I think the person has a dream where a hearse comes up. And somebody steps out of the hearse. like they're in their house at night and they dream like a hearse comes up and a guy steps out and says, there's room for one more.
Yeah.
And the person says, no, thank you. And then the hearse drives away. And then the next day in waking life, the person is about to get on an elevator and the doors open and it's the dude from the hearse. And he said, there's room for one more. And she says, no, thank you. And then she heard screaming and the elevator falls to the, that one's kind of creepy, like foretelling.
It reminded me of, and I think I've talked about this with, Appointment in Samara. That there's a
book. That's in the third volume.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where person meets death and says, oh, yep. I don't know. The gist of it is, oh, I surprised to see you here in this town. I had an appointment with you in X. You could change the city to X, Y, and Z, I guess.
Yeah, no, you see the kid, the person sees death in the marketplace and runs away to Samara to try to avoid their fate. And then death says, oh, I was just surprised to see you there because I have an appointment with you in Samara tomorrow.
But there were, I liked, let's see here, a couple other ones I liked. I highlighted the girl who stood on a grave. I thought that was the hook one. Is that what it's called? Hold on.
Yeah, the hook.
The hook freaked me out.
The couple's out on a date and they hear on the radio there's an escaped killer from the prison that's nearby. And the girl gets freaked out and says, we have to go home. The guy's a little annoyed, but then they drive off. And then as he goes around to open the door for her when she's home, there's a hook hanging off the car. See, that's a creepy, that's an urban legend. But you know what I thought of? You know what I made a note of there? I was like, wait, so they let him keep his hook in prison? Because if he escaped from prison, there's no way he still has his hook.
Your brain goes.
It's a little slight flaw.
Or he was just like, hey, I need that. Like,
yeah, like his checked in. They let you check in your belongings before. Like,
it's my hook. Yeah. No, I didn't like it. Flipping through this, man, all the if you've never read this, get the original drawings because
you have to. That's what
there's one called The Babysitter that has this like, it looks like an older, like a middle-aged woman, but she's the size, I don't know, the size of a child, and she's holding an infant, and it's just so creepy. It's like everything's off by a little bit.
Drawings are slightly exaggerated and they're hard to describe. I'll post some pictures.
Some of them are terrifying. Some of them are like like outland, like really kind of gruesome.
Well, some of them it's hard to finish reading on the page because you feel like they're staring at you. Did you find that?
Yeah. There's almost some like weird folklore elements to some of them, like weird. I don't know, like they made something back in, you know, 1880s and it was like misshaped and they're like, I guess we'll sell this like little miniature donkey or whatever, and you're like, oh, that's just creepy. But any highlights from the second and third, how do they stack up versus
they're good? There are some aspects of the second one that were creepier than the first.
Okay.
But they were staggered. I looked at the publishing dates. I think first one is 1981, then 1984, and then the third one is 1991.
Okay.
But they sold incredibly well, like 7 million copies. They were really big back in the day. There is a creepy one from this book two. It's called The Bed by the Window.
Okay.
It's these two old guys at a hospital, and one has a window bed. Like, you can see out the window, and the other one doesn't. And the guy by the window is always describing the scenery. You know, there's a tree, there's a woman walking her dog, there's, you know, all this stuff going on. And he's just being a nice guy and describing this stuff to the guy who can't see. But the second guy gets jealous and wants a window view. And so he poisons the guy's, you know, poisons the guy's food or drink or whatever. Dies. The guy dies. He moves over to get the window. The bed by the window, and as soon as he looks out, there's just a brick wall.
It's a little bit of Yeah, there's a little bit of like they're not always 100% scary. They're almost psychological in a way, you know.
That's the type of stuff that gets me.
That's what I was going to ask you. Where is the sweet spot of what terrify? Like, what do you like, that psychological? Do you like the jump scare stuff? Do you like the I don't know, almost true crime, I guess you would call it, like, oh, a serial killer on the loose, ghost. I would say the ghost is in the middle for me. And what I feel like what makes me the most uncomfortable is a scenario where a person has someone close to them and they don't realize it. So that's why that the story High Beams is,
oh yeah, yeah,
there's a person right behind your seat and you don't realize it, and this you're in a situation where you're kind of confused, and the whole story revolves around the fact that someone's very close to you, trying to kill you, I guess, in a way, but they're so close and you don't realize it. That freaks me out, because I think that's something I fear, like,
yeah, I could see that
in real life.
Yeah. Are you gonna check the backseat of your car all the time?
Well,
drive.
I think I did have that fear at one point in my life, but I don't know, like. Do you understand what I'm saying? Or is there someone close? Oh, like when you're in the house by yourself and you're hearing noises and you're like, what if someone was just in the house with me?
Mm-hmm. Somebody's standing real still in the garage or something.
Yeah.
Or you go out into the kitchen in the middle of the night to get a glass of water or something, and you turn on the light and out of the corner of your eye, you see there's a guy standing there with a knife. Yeah, it's creepy, right?
Like, after I record this podcast, I'm probably gonna be a little on edge. I think that's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
So where are you at? What stories does make you, Matt, unnerved? Is it this kind of story you just described where it's a little psychological?
The bed by the window.
It's a little bit like life is meaningless sort of thing.
No. It was the guy. No, it wasn't that. It was
it's a little bit of a twist.
The guy was being nice and thought he was.
Yeah, it's a clever twist.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, what got me? The Room for One More. The hook, I think what makes that story kind of fun, especially when you're younger, is not realizing how close you were to something bad happening until after, you know, because the couple in that story were oblivious until the end when they see the hook hanging there. That type of thing.
Should I read you the story that I
listener
can hear? So I can, let me try my, I might do an accent. Let me pull it up here. And as you're listening to this, feel free to let us know. We usually give our plugs at the end for, let us know what your favorite story in these were and what kind of story affected you the most.
You read them. Let us know if you read them.
If you read them, yeah, as a kid.
And then, you know, what do you remember?
All right, man.
Because they're fun. They're fun to flip through when you're older, when you're our age.
They are. So this story is called High Beams from Volume 1. Indulge me. The girl driving the old blue sedan was a senior at high school. She lived on a farm about 8 miles away and used the car to drive back and forth. She had driven into town that night to see a basketball game. Now she was on her way home, and as she pulled away from the school, she noticed a red pickup truck follow her out of the parking lot. A few minutes later, the truck was still behind her. I guess we're going in the same direction, she thought. She began to watch the truck in her mirror. When she changed her speed, the driver of the truck changed his speed. When she passed a car, so did he. Then he turned on his high beams, flooding her car with light. He left them on for almost a minute. He probably wants to pass me, she thought, but she was becoming uneasy. Usually she drove home over a back road. Not too many people went that way, but when she turned onto that road, so did the truck. I've got to get away from him, she thought, and she began to drive faster, and then he turned his high beams on again. After a minute, he turned them off, then he turned them on again and off again. She drove even faster, but the truck driver stayed right behind her. Then he turned his high beams on again, Once more, her car was ablaze with light. What is he doing? She wondered. What does he want? Then he turned them off again. But a minute later, he had them on again, and he left them on. At last, she pulled into her driveway, and the truck pulled in right behind her. She jumped from the car and ran to the house. Call the police, she screamed at her father. Out in the driveway, she could see the driver of the truck, and he had a gun in his hand. When the police arrived, they started to arrest him, but he pointed to the girl's car. You don't want me, he said. You want him. Crouched behind the driver's seat, there was a man with a knife. As the driver of the truck explained it, the man slipped into the girl's car just before she left the school. He saw it happen, but there was no way he could stop it. He thought about getting the police, but he was afraid to leave her, so he followed her car. Each time the man in the back seat reached up to overpower her, the driver of the truck turned up on his high beams. Then the man dropped down, afraid that someone might see him. Mm-hmm. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. Unnerving to the nth degree. Fantastic. Oh, I love that story. Love it. One of my top five little stories I've read this year.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just think that's just a clever, fat, like, oh, that's just perfect. Freaks me out. I love it.
I can see that. Yeah. I can see that being disturbing for you.
How was my reading voice? Very good.
It was good. It was good. I like the trucker voice.
I thought about doing the whole story in a British accent. I won't I won't lie. I was running through some scenarios about I might just
This is mostly American folklore. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I could have made it British. I was driving over from Liverpool. I just seen the Beatles play. I was driving home.
Well, you know, I've seen her in the truck, you know, but there's this bloke behind her, you know, and he's got a knife.
Oh, bloody blah. Anyway.
you know what's interesting? Because I kind of got a little, I read some of the books downstairs in my den, which is the little lamp overhead. And then some in bed before I went to sleep. And I did kind of make a point when I was done reading them for the night, I would kind of move them into a study. Like I moved into a different room because I didn't want the books in the same room, like interfering with my dream. It's like, okay, I'm done with these for the night. So I'll move them into the next room. So they're not like right next to me. But I was thinking an effective way to kind of get that out of your mind before you go to sleep or whatever is to dwell on your real life adult problems. You know, so I the last story I read was like about a witch or something. It's like, that could really get into my dreams. So I just started thinking about my student loans. Yeah, okay, that's a little. So that might be an effective way to deal with an actual ghost too. You know, it's like you're in the middle of the night, you wake up, there's like a really creepy, like wet, old timey, like somebody from The Ring, like just hovering there. And you're like, hold on, just a sec. Let me pull something up. And you get on your computer and you're like, come here, ghost, take a look at this. And he's like, what is what? 28,000. What does that mean? It's like, that's my student loan. You owe 28,000 to the university, not even to the university, to some private company that's actually the hedge fund. And they gamble on whether or not I'm going to pay it back. Like that. And look at this. What does it say? 26,000. From 2008. It's like, that's when I graduated. It's actually gone up $2,000 in 12 years. Like, oh, that's terrible.
Should be laughing. That's a good way.
If you see a ghost, I think you burden them with your problems. I'd be like, I'm sorry you got murdered 150 years ago, but, you know.
Let's get to the facts here. Do you believe in ghosts?
Sort of. I've never had an experience. I know people who have had an experience with them. I wonder if time is an illusion. Okay. Time is the fourth dimension, and we don't see it because we're three-dimensional beings, but time appears to be real to us, but it's not.
Okay.
You go further up in the dimensions, it's not real. Everything's already kind of played out. It only, you know, we're just not in a perspective to see it. So what we think as ghosts are, oh, and time also happens simultaneously.
Okay.
You know, so sometimes there's little wrinkles or ripples in kind of the fabric, and you're not really going back in the past. The past is happening simultaneously with us now in the future. There is no past, present, future. Everything's happening at once. So maybe ghosts, they're not the legend. We create these legends about, you know, people from the past haunting us or whatever, but they're really just ripples, and we're seeing other things happen simultaneously.
I like the theory.
A weird ghost to them or whatever, and so maybe the fabric of time can kind of split or do weird things every now and then. So you're not seeing the dead come back. You're seeing something else happen.
I like what you've...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Who knows?
I was thinking... This is a weird tangent. But you know how, like, the government at this point is pretty much like, yeah, there are, like, UFOs that we just can't explain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're kind of, like, open about it. And it used to be like, oh, the thing growing up was like, oh, they know about UFOs. Now they're just like, yeah, we don't know what this is, right?
Yeah.
What if in, like, 85 years, they prove what you just explained, kind of, like, a similar thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And then everyone else after that grows up with, oh, we live in a, I don't even, what dimension would that be? And there's a very confusing thing. Do you think it would have a positive effect on humanity or a negative effect on humanity?
I don't know. I don't know if it'd ever be public information.
You don't think it would be? Okay.
You know, I don't know how much of that would filter down. I think we'd still have our stories and legends.
So you think it would be create chaos?
No, I think human nature doesn't change. I think life would kind of continue as is. I mean, it's pretty amazing we've been to the moon. There's plenty of amazing stuff where if you sit down and think about it, it's amazing. Everybody has their petty jealousies and gets mad at stupid stuff and watches sports and complains on Twitter. You know, like, we still do that despite all of the amazing stuff we know, right? So I think no matter what, there'd be a moment where people are like, oh, that was crazy when aliens landed or when we landed on the moon or whatever. But then you go back to being people.
Yeah.
You know what I did want to bring up? What you were saying kind of triggered it for me. In book three of this, there's a little poltergeist story, right? Haunted house thing where things move and shatter. And poltergeist, as opposed to like your more classic ghost, poltergeist, you don't really see stuff just breaks and happens and whatnot. There's a theory that Alvin Schwartz kind of just explicitly says, and it reminded me of The Little Stranger and a little bit of Haunting of Hill House. So what Alvin Schwartz is talking about at the end of the story, there's a theory that, because in the house where all the stuff was breaking, there was a teenager, and they think it might have been the angst and everything you have as a teenager. For whatever reason, this teenager, you know, unaware, even unbeknownst even to him, you know, all his psychic energy was actually moving and breaking stuff. And that's a real theory for a theory people have for poltergeist type activities. But that was kind of an undercurrent of The Little Stranger. Do you remember that?
Yeah, So that was last year's.
Last year's October book.
That was very good
too. But it was like, they kind of brought, and I think they kind of bring it up barely in The Haunting of Hill House, but maybe how much of the hauntings and whatnot are in people's minds and how much of it is like psychic energy that you're not even aware of. Maybe or even from structuring a story from that point of view.
Because I think we talked about this on previous, like, spooky October books. It's, you can have a lot of fun with the structure and how you layer a scary story. Like, where, what is the cause and effect? Like, what these things are happening? Are they in the person's mind? Whose story are, you know, point of view are we in? All these kind of stuff that, I don't know if you see maybe you don't notice them as much, but when you're reading like a ghost or a scary story, you see like, or a good author will tweak those things, right? Will kind of make
play with
while planting a alternate, like a alternate meaning or.
Well, yeah, how much of this is real? How much of this is in the person's mind? Because we read Turn of the Screw also last year. Remember that? And I kind of came on the theory that it was the ghosts weren't real. They were real, but they were just in our protagonist's head. Which I really do think that the story works better. Like Henry James left it open. But I come down on the my interpretation of that was like it was all in the nurse's head. And she wound up killing the kids because
Do you think a lot of these stories are, they're like mental health in a way of like talking about mental health?
You could phrase, I mean, sure, like that's a catch-all.
You could write like a paper on it. I guess it's not like how you would.
Or just or phrasing it mental health, but like disturbed individuals.
Yeah, like
who create, well, they create, they have an, they're, go the goings on in their head have an impact on the outside world. And it's not even just because it's only in their head doesn't even necessarily make it not real. That was in The Haunting of Hill House, right? How much of it was the protagonist? How much was the protagonist, her own mental state made her very unfit to deal with just the creepiness of the house itself? And a good author will play with all that. But you know, like, that's always got to be there, right?
There's sort of fear too, don't you think, of the capability of your mind sort of going haywire and tormenting you, or seeing connections where there are no connections, or seeing the shadow, or seeing the wall move, or seeing the
face
in the wallpaper. All these things are not kind of in your control when they just snap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of the thing a good author, I think, will play with. The protagonist will think, am I crazy or is this real? And either way, it's terrifying. Like either answer to that, if it's real, it's scary. If I'm going crazy and seeing things, that is also scary. You know, because I think that was, I'm remembering Haunting of Hill House coming back to me now. I think that was kind of what was going on there. Because our main protagonist was like, she had the worst time of it. And she was already kind of, she had a fragile home life and she was kind of unstable. And I think the house was like haunted. It was not just in her head, but everybody else kind of dealt with it better. But she snapped. She had the worst go of it. But that was because she was already unstable coming into a creepy situation. Right. And I think the nursemaid or whoever it was from Turn of the Screw, it was all in her head. But that had real world effects.
The little stranger was a little bit of a, if I remember correctly, it was like what was like the guy's name in that book? It was sort of what was his role in all of it, right?
The brother or the doctor?
The doctor.
I think it was the doctor, because the little stranger itself is kind of what I was talking about with the poltergeist activity being somebody's unacknowledged, unconscious, unrecognized psychological angst. I'm pretty sure that the little, and it, they named it The Little Stranger in the book. And I'm pretty sure if you read between the lines, it's supposed to be kind of the doctor's angst. Like he unawares, I mean, spoilers for a wonderful book, the Little Stranger, but I'm pretty sure the doctor wound up, everybody next to him wound up dying, I think, because of his unacknowledged nerves.
In real life, do you have a scenario where you've been terrified, been scared? Anything come to mind?
Not along the lines of this.
Okay.
I do remember some of my friends, we went and saw Blair Witch Project in the theaters.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking about that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, and then afterwards, we all went back to my buddy Mike's house. He had an outdoor, like a little above ground backyard pool, you know, and there were kind of woods behind his house. And we kind of went out there to swim and we were all kind of like a little creeped out being outside the dark after seeing that movie, but trying not to. So like, oh, I'm not bothered. It's like, hey, do you want to go in? Hey, let's go. Let's just go in. So what, nothing, I've never seen a ghost or anything, but I do kind of remember well, let's not hang out outside anymore.
That movie was have some of the best marketing I think I can ever recall, because for at least 6 months, call me crazy, but I wasn't entirely clear if this was fake or not.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. And it was one of those scenarios where I just acted like I knew the answer, and I internally was like, I don't know what's going on here. And yeah, then people were like, yeah, it's fake. But, you know, and in my head, I'm like, oh, I just internally, like, I just got to figure this out on my own. I can't. Yeah. That's kind of like a good insight into my personality, where I was like, yep, nah, obviously. And then internally, I was like, I don't know the answer to if this movie was fake or not.
It was fake. It was
fake, but to me, well, I would have been teenager. To teenage me, I was not entirely sure if that was a real movie or a fake movie.
That's in keeping with.
And when I'm most terrified is when I watch a movie based on real events about a killer or some terrible story, and I then leave that movie theater or living room, and I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be murdered by said serial killer. Prime example is I saw the Zodiac movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I was fairly certain, spoiler alert, they never caught the Zodiac killer. That I was going to be murdered by the Zodiac killer that night. So,
because you saw the movie,
that was top five. I was terrified. I have a story that I heard growing up. My uncle saw Psycho.
Yeah,
and I think this is like a Wiley. Like this was reported. Like people were freaked out from Psycho in the 60s, and like my uncle was terrified of. I can't remember. He's like getting into his car. Like he had to park under like street lamps for a while. Like he was just terrified or something. Like it just wrecked him. And I was like, I feel you. I couldn't even finish Psycho when I watched it as a kid.
Really?
Alarm bells went off.
Too young to see. Yeah.
I tried watching it later on. I was like, I can't. This is I can't do it.
Yeah.
I'm not one for the scary movie.
Is that
I think I've told this before. I take off my glasses. I can't see my glasses on. I just take off my glasses. That means I can keep my eyes open. I just can't see it like literally anything. So it's a little
would you say Psycho is the scariest movie you've ever seen?
It's up there.
Yeah.
It's unnerving, yeah. I don't know. So yeah, they're all. I think every scary movie I see is pretty terrifying. I'm not gonna lie. That's all I know. What's your scariest movie you've ever seen?
Oh, when I saw The Ring, I think in early college, that was pretty creepy. Something about the kid coming out of the well.
Yeah.
That kind of in high school, I'll admit to like slasher movies kind of creep me out because that seemed halfway plausible.
Exactly.
I didn't get too scared of like Exorcist or vampire monster movies because I knew like I could separate, like, yeah, that's not real. But for some reason, like, serial killer, you know, people you think are your friends could dress up in the Scream mask and stab you with a knife, like, that's plausible. So those kind of got me. I don't know. I asked my wife, she said Blair Witch, scariest she's ever seen.
That's a scary movie.
It's pretty creepy. I don't know also, if I'd be
like that right now. People who are, I appreciate what you're doing. I think you can handle a scary movie. I don't like when people are like, oh, that's not scary. She's like, there's different levels. People have different, I can't control this.
And you're very empathetic. You're what they call an empath.
Sure. So, I don't know what that means. Yeah. It sounds like I'm in Star Wars or something. I'm an empath.
Yeah, I think it's like a YA literature term.
Just be like, if someone's scared about something that you're not scared about, it's fine. Let them be scared. Let them be scared.
I have to admit to you, I've been halfway tempted to. So for the listener, we're on Zoom and I can see behind Peter and I know he's in his attic and there are two slim little windows off to either side.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, And I'm like, what if I told him, like, I see a face in the window?
So now, I'll be honest, now I'm freaked out because I can see myself in the top. And
what if I did see a little
face? What if there's, like, that kind of looks behind me, like, there's a weird reflection? That kind of does look like a weird, you see what I'm saying, looking at me?
I saw a siren go by, and I was like, oh, what are those lights? And then that's what, was like, oh, what if I saw a face or a guy with a knife?
This is terrible. This is one of the worst episodes ever. I literally hate that. My hands are kind of getting a little sweaty right now. I'm not going to lie.
I'll just start staring off and ignoring you because I'm staring off.
I hate this because I literally am in an attic. It's kind of like finished or whatever, but it's, you know, low ceilings.
Burden them with your real life problems. You're like, I worked 15 days at a less 17. I really don't have time for you. Ghost with a knife.
My hands are all jacked and
dried
and cracked and bloody from working in the warehouse, and it's annoying me.
Yeah, just burden them with that. Be like,
okay. I like that.
Be like, so you have at it, man.
My eyes have at it. Has a hole in it.
I got a mortgage. I got student loans. So whatever you need to do, man.
Okay,
whatever.
I think that's a good way. It's a good therapy session for me. It's just burden the ghost or the killer outside my window with my problems.
With your mundane problems. Yeah.
So any final thoughts on scary stories? Tell them.
I made a list
list.
Things that are not scary.
Things are not scary. Okay. All right. Let's end on that. Let's end on
you, that. I figured maybe you would be a little worked up.
I am. Okay, continue. Yeah.
So here I found some things that are kind of
flat. You didn't see that. I looked over my shoulder because I was a little.
The guy, he just missed. Just missed him. All right. Is that a size? Okay. List of things that are not scary. Michael Bublé.
Not scary. Yeah, I agree.
I met him once and I was like, you don't scare me. I told him that.
You're like, you're not scary.
You're not scary.
Your name.
He winked at me.
Is this a true story?
No, I haven't met Michael Bublé. I want to get him on the show. I think he's a smart guy. I think he reads.
Hi, Michael Bublé. Bublé. Sorry.
Michael Bublé, not
that's
scary.
The only joke
in a good way. We're not making fun.
He's got a lovely voice.
Here's the despite the name, The Killers, the band.
Oh, okay. They're not scary. I thought you were talking about. You know what? Killers are not scary.
No, the band, The Killers. They're not scary.
No, not scary. They're
I think they're Mormon. Not scary.
They're from, I believe, Las Vegas. Mormon rockers.
Utah. They're like Mitt Romney's favorite band. So
you know what? I think you're trying to slander The Killers. You're not. You're failing. The Killers are great.
Slandering The Killers. I was listening to them earlier today. That's why I thought of it.
Right after Billy Joel Volume 3 got to play in the car.
Billy
Joel, slightly scary. Slightly
scary. How good he is. And the last on my list of things that are not scary. The Cookie Monster.
I disagree. I think the Cookie Monster is kind of scary.
Despite the name, I was never able to take that guy seriously.
But puppets, would you consider puppets not scary?
No, in that world, the one I do find the most scary is probably Miss Piggy.
Oh, interesting.
She seems like she stabbed people. She's scary. She's scary. I fear for Kermit. But the Cookie Monster,
you always bring this up every like 20 episodes.
Muppets?
Yeah.
I cast everything we do as Muppet, whatever.
Even if I don't bring it up, I cast. Yeah. Do you have a secondary podcast called Muppets?
Yeah.
Where are they now? Who are they now?
There will be Muppets.
There will be Muppets. Podcast about Muppets. That's it. I'm Matt. No co-host.
I just theoretically cast the Muppets in every single movie. Let's go through.
Just 5 minutes. Tonight's
Gone
episode.
With the Wind.
Tonight's episode, Con Air. Anyway.
Yeah. Ooh, that's perfect.
Go ahead. Go ahead. I just created this podcast for you. Go ahead.
Con Air. I mean, obviously, Nicolas Cage is Kermit.
Okay.
And John Malkovich is Fozzie. I mean,
it's game you could play.
Yeah.
You're not too cool that you don't want to play your Muppet game, Matt.
So those were good. I asked my wife, what's the least scary thing in the world? She said babies.
No, see, I think babies can be scary.
So when they're loud, it's yeah. You're scared they're going to wake you up in the middle of the night. So
ladybugs, what about ladybugs? Ladybugs, not scary.
I could see you freaking out if one landed on your arm and it wouldn't go off.
Eyelash. You convinced me. Ladybugs are off that list. What is not scary?
The least scary thing in the world.
The least scary thing in the world. I was thinking marshmallows.
Hey, nice. Sad said cotton candy.
See, I was thinking cotton candy, but then I was thinking, well, you're eating cotton candy, and the hand came out and grabbed you by the wrist.
Yeah. What about that huge marshmallow guy from Ghostbusters?
True. That I also didn't
think. Walking around, destroying.
How are marshmallows made? That's unnerving. I don't get it. I think this whole episode is just me being like, Peter's scared of things. He's neurotic. It's easy to scare him. Have at it. Find him in the public. Scare him.
Yeah. That would be a fun thing to do.
That would be a fun
thing. You see Peter in public, jump out from behind a building and scare him.
No, what you should do?
What's that?
Drive behind me and put your high beams on at random moments.
Yeah.
I will stop my car, get out, and walk home.
Let's give the listening audience your license plate number so they know.
Fool me once. No. I'm not going to
drive the 1987 Saab.
No.
Colorado license plate.
ABDCD48. Matt, this podcast I'm gonna be therapy for. And I don't know what least scary thing. I don't have an answer for you. I think I find fear in everything.
You could find anything scary.
That could be my tombstone. I find fear in everything.
Ooh. That's a good tagline.
Pretty for cool. I find fear in
everything. Your one-man show.
I'm fearing
everything. Yeah.
And then your Muppet show opens up for my fear show.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Or like, it's like the stupid little online articles that always start with meet the person who, and whatever. That's like the fear. Yeah. Meet the person who finds fear in everything.
I find fear in everything. Name something I'll find fear in it. Go ahead.
Puppy dog.
Rabies. There you go. Easy.
Little goldfish.
You could swallow them. You could live in your stomach for who knows. You try Googling that, there's gonna be no answer. Google. How long can a goldfish live in my stomach?
Meet the man who's 18-year-old goldfish grows in his stomach.
Answer. Internet's broken. Maybe forever. It's like the whole, you're going to say gum, swallow gum. How long does it stay in your system? I don't know. 8 years?
7 years, yeah.
7 years, something like that. A dog's year. It's gum. I don't know. I'm getting paranoid now. This is the end of the
show. Yeah.
I think this is the end of this episode. It's been terrifying but fun. I actually,
the guy behind you is like motion.
Stop.
He's doing the wrap it up. He's very pale, but yeah, he wants to.
I will say, in all, without fear, this was very enjoyable to go through these.
It was entertaining, huh?
Very entertaining. It was like a good palate cleanser in a way. Don't you agree? Yeah, it was a palate cleanser of fear and
like the wasabi if you eat sushi or something. Like, ooh, that was a spicy. You know, they give you the wasabi and ginger.
Yeah, I got you. I was waiting for you to finish that.
This is a good analogy.
I haven't told you this, before I get into what we're doing of our TBR, I am in one of the great reading, like, not slumps, but the opposite of a slump. I am on, like,
hot streak
of books. Some of these I've been reading for the podcast. Some of these I'm reading on my own, which I'm going to do for a holiday book preview thing. But I counted last night, man. I have read 8 straight 5-star books.
Wow.
I can't think of another time in my life where I've been on this much of a hot streak.
Wow.
So the books from the podcast that I read recently would be 8 Men Out. I thought it was fantastic. 5-star. We still have to come, Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead, which I loved. That's a 5-star. The rest of them I've read on my own, but it has been since August, maybe no, since September, I've been on an incredible streak, and I'm just, knock on wood, it doesn't end soon.
Hey, have you done Sword in the Stone yet? You started Once Future King?
I have started that. I'm going to have to I'm going to start from the beginning again. Just so that as a possibility of being a 5-star if I finish.
I was
going
to say, it's the whole book. Be, yeah. The whole book's fantastic. Sword in the Stone, especially, I think it's just kind of a delightful, be a good palate cleanser for the scary stuff.
Scary stuff, when, you know, I'll just tell the scary stuff my problems. But and I think coming up on an episode, we're going to talk about some of the stuff we've been reading off, and I'll have a list of books for you, listener, that I highly, highly recommend. All fairly new too, so I picked them up from the library. So
I have a couple. I read Nick Tosh's biography of Arnold Rothstein. And some other stuff. So we'll talk about kind of our extracurricular stuff, pick a November book.
So yeah, we have that. We also have, I mentioned, Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead. We have The Master Margarita, Lions of Lucerne, which is going to be over on Patreon, our thriller book club.
I finished it.
You did?
I think it's going to be fun. Okay. Let me know when you're done with it. I think it'll be fun.
And like Matt said, we'll be picking a book for November. I know it's kind of almost mid to late November, but that's how we roll.
Don't worry about it. I didn't want to do this on air.
Okay.
Laundry, but I think I have to. It's gotten to a point where I have to say something.
Is this about the books that I owe you?
Yes.
Okay.
We, among other things, we have to, before the Chiefs play the Broncos this year, we have to settle up.
I have to give you 2 books.
So you have to give me the books, and you have to read, and we have to discuss Norman Mailer's Advertisements for Himself. An essay, a good essay. It's not a punishment. It's a rich essay by Gore Vidal. I sent it to you. It's online. It's free. So you have to read and discuss that.
Okay.
So moving forward, when we do our bets, we have a clean slate and they don't just pile up.
Okay. I admit this is on me. This will be rectified in the next week or two.
Norman Mailer's Advertisements. I'll email it to you again.
Email it to me again.
It's a good essay to talk about.
I will get you 1 table, coffee table book and 1 other book. And those will be, I will drop those off at your house.
Okay. We'll hang out. We'll do something. I also have, I'm assuming I was going to, back when I thought maybe the Broncos were going to be good and Russell Wilson was,
I don't know what you mean, so.
Sorry, I don't want, well,
the traumatizing episode, and you're going to end on this.
I saw a book that would be perfect for you, so I bought it, assuming, like,
yeah.
So I have, whatever, you'll wind up getting it regardless, but yeah. I think it's a good book. There's nobody else in the world who would appreciate it, but it's a good book, so we'll settle, clear the deck, settle old scores, and be ready to
for me to lose another bet.
Okay. We'll see how it goes. Maybe you guys will pull it together.
Well, this has been a fun episode, and I think the most important thing that you can take from tonight's episode is tell the ghosts in your life your real life problems, and they will
tell them how much debt you have. Don't worry about them floating there all creepy. Just tell them about your What about your debt and your mortgage, your car payment?
We will talk to you next week.